Next, we'll meet a playwright who's been thinking about one of the more dramatic stories in Africa in the 19th century. It was the white colonization of the country that was, for a time, known as Rhodesia. The playwright turned that history into a visceral new play now on stage in Princeton, New Jersey. Whether you're ever able to see The Convert or not, it is worth hearing the story of its author. Here's Jeff London.
Playwright Denai Gurira sometimes refers to herself as Zimmerican. While she was born in Iowa, she spent most of her childhood in her parents' home city, Harare, Zimbabwe. It's where her new play is set.
I grew up there from age 5 to 19. I'm back there every year. But I feel like there are things that I had to dig out through this process of creating this play that for some reason I wasn't exposed to a lot, just in terms of how, you know, I was educated. I was educated very much in a neo-colonial way, honestly.
Gurira says The Convert is the first play in a series she hopes to write about Zimbabwe through the eyes of the people whose lives were transformed by colonialism.
I was thinking one day and I was like, I want to make a play that's sort of like an adaptation of Pygmalion about Zimbabwe, because I just feel like there's so many parallel themes. And that's really where it was born from. And then it just took its own route.
In Pygmalion, Henry Higgins takes a poor flower girl named Eliza Doolittle and teaches her to speak the king's English. In The Convert, a young woman from the Shona tribe, Jekasi, runs away from an arranged marriage and is taken under the wing of a black Catholic missionary named Chilford.
Well, the first of things that must be done is that name must be changed. You need a name that expresses a Christian faith. Mary, mother of Jesus, is the most blessed name. But I just need another girl this afternoon. There's Ruth. But I hate names of monosyllables. So, Esther.
Gurira uses her own family history in the play. Her great-great-aunt became a nun, fleeing a forced betrothal. Director Emily Mann says this was a common occurrence in Rhodesia in the late 19th century, when the play is set.
There were many, many women who ran to the church. Some of them became nuns, some of them became teachers, basically so that they could be free. You know, women were often fleeing being sold off in a way, or being given away without their own permission to a man to be, you know, could be, as in this play, the 10th wife of an old man.
And Jekasi, or Esther as she's christened, adapts quickly to her new situation. Pascal Armand plays the teenage girl.
She's learned a whole new language. She's learned about a whole new religion, which she has put complete and utter faith in, like puts her life into this new way of thinking and new way of believing.
Leading her in this transformation is Chilford, who has renounced his own family and tribal traditions. And while his deepest desire is to become a priest, few black Africans were ordained in those days. He's a decent and well-meaning man, playwright Denai Gurira says, but...
He's a casualty, one could say, of the issue of colonization, in the sense that he really drinks all the Kool-Aid, like every last drop of it, really embracing hook, line, sinker, the idea that a Christian God is very intertwined with a white man.
The gap between doctrine and reality, black and white, causes the characters to be twisted like pretzels. For instance, Chilford is furious at Esther for correcting a white priest in church. But actress Pascal Armand says the village girl doesn't understand why she has to defer.
I have no understanding of racism. This is my first introduction to that term, to that ideology that I now have to deal with and be subservient to, and no.
You told me that we must never be in the tolerance of a misquoting of the Bible in our presence.
Yes,
you told me that under that circumstance we must be quick to correct, to be of certainty that the Lord's word is never in distortion. That is what I am in belief that I did.
Yes, but not to Father Bart.
May I be asking why?
Why? Is it not in the obvious? He is a white.
He is?
So you may never correct him.
While white characters are discussed on stage, The Convert is told entirely from the black viewpoint. In an early draft of the play, Gurira says she attempted to write a scene with Chilford's white mentor.
I actually tried. I tried to put him on the stage. And I was like, no, it's going to be an absolute caricature. I'm not going to be able. And it didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense. I was like, this is going to be the play from the colonized perspective.
The tensions in the society erupt, and in the second act, the audience finds out that Chilford's mentor has been killed. And as the convert unfolds in highly intense fashion over the course of 3 hours, it becomes clear that, unlike Shaw's Pygmalion, this is a tragedy. Blood will be spilled. Lives will be ruined. Director Emily Mann.
You begin to understand from the colonized what colonialism really is. And because Denai is too smart to make it one person's right and one person's wrong, or black and white in any way, she's so interested in gray areas. She's so interested in how messy human beings really are.
Things are not good, brother.
What happened to your head, man? I have a seat, man.
The rebellion, it has spread. It is now certain to us here. In Mashona land.
Mashona? Never! They're too docile. That cannot be of truth.
It is. The first family was already slaughtered.
Even though The Convert is set in the late 19th century, Denai Guerrera thinks it has relevance to the problems of contemporary Africa.
What dynamics of our traditions do we retain, and what are we retaining only because we got colonized? And so there was this huge, you know, stop gap that happened in terms of how we were taken over and we were not able to evolve in our own way in our own time.
The Convert finishes its run in Princeton this Sunday. It then moves on to the Goodman Theater in Chicago and the Center Theater Group in Los Angeles. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London.
From NPR News, it's Morning Edition. Our engineering supervisor is Kevin Langley. Our technical director is Kurt Stoniker. Audio engineers include Stacey Abbott, who's at the controls as I speak, Brian Jarbo, Vince Muse, Greg Gavin, Dennis Nielsen, Sean Phillips, Nathan Bark, William Plummer, and Burke Hun, with Theo Mondel at NPR West. Our executive producer is Madalika Kasika. The executive editor of news programming is Ellen McDonald. Our theme music was written by B.J. Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm Steve Inskeep.